Alright, hi everybody and welcome to this episode of the Planning Period Podcast. I can't even say the name of my own show. Brad is off to a great start today. Let's try that again. Hi everybody and welcome to this special edition of the Planning Period Podcast. I am live at the end of Ed Camp Orange and I've just spent the morning and the last 6 hours or something like that talking about education with some phenomenal people and I've had so much fun. This has been really cool. It's my first real EdCamp experience, so I thought a great way to close it out would be to do a little live broadcast, like record some stuff, talk to some people, and so here we are, and I've got three guests with me already, which I'm excited about, but I'm going to start right in front of me because she was the first to sit down with Terry. How are you doing today?
Doing well. How are you?
I'm great. I had a good time. Did you have a good time?
I really did. Cool. It was really fun.
Your first EdCamp, right?
Yes. Yes.
All right.
My first time.
Tell me, how did it go?
It went great. It actually, I was really interested in podcasting, so that's one of the reasons I came. So I was really like, I really enjoyed your session.
Thank
so.
You. I appreciate it. I always like it when people suck up on my mic.
Right?
Then I get recordings of it. It's really good. I have a small ego. I don't have a good ego. I don't feel good about myself most of the time, as anyone knows. So it's always good to just boost that back
yes,
up.
It's recorded
that.
Now, yeah, so it's good.
Yep.
Yeah.
I can always go back to it.
Yes. Yes.
So you learned a little bit about podcasting.
I learned about sketchnoting, which is also something that I've really been interested in, but I haven't had a chance to really look into. Learned all about using Twitter, which I had previously only used to, like, read Chrissy Teigen tweets. So
okay.
That's so I'm really interested. I was in finding out about the educational uses of it, which I'm just so excited. That's what I'm walking out of here actually most excited about is all the educational things that are on Twitter right now. So
yeah, Twitter is magic. It is my world outside of my actual life. I'm on Twitter way more than I should be, probably more than it's healthy. And it's always funny to me because I live in it so much. It's so weird to me that people don't know about it. Like it amazes me sometimes that so few people actually realize the value of what Twitter can be. And I think I said in one of my sessions that like in this world where we kind of have this negative look of like the only thing you ever see on Twitter are these ridiculous things that Donald Trump tweets and then all the trolls replying to him. That's never my Twitter feed. My Twitter feed is just phenomenal educators doing phenomenal things. Like I go in there and I see student learning literally embodied in text and pictures and it's awesome. And yet there's this like real negative view of Twitter and it's kind of sad.
It's true, yeah.
So cool. I've got some other people here with me. I appreciate those who the left name tags on because I'm going to fall apart. There we go. It's fun to see. I got some names. Awesome. I want to say Jasmine though.
Yes.
I remember the name.
Hours ago.
I know. Yes. Jasmine, did you have a good time?
I really did. It's my first one. I came because Dr. Scanlon had mentioned that it might be a good thing to do. And I really enjoyed myself. I didn't know what to expect. And I learned a lot. I did sketch noted all my sessions and enjoyed yours on podcasting. Maybe I'll get into that. It's not something I've thought about.
Like, it's fun.
As an education tool, kids might like it.
Yeah, they do. I'm doing now one with my kids, and they love it. Like
yeah.
They've made a couple comments about how much they're enjoying doing it and just really owning it. It's been neat. So it's been a little really cool experience for them. So I encourage it heavily. Obviously, I'm a fan of podcasting, as we're all sitting here recording one. So clearly, that's something I'm interested in. Rashid?
Yes, I also feel the same way. I picked up so many new ideas, and especially what I learned about podcasting. That is something that I definitely plan to use and include my students in it also.
I feel like podcasting has dominated at Camp Orange this year. My bad. That one's on me. I have an obsession. I like to share my obsession with them. I'm basically a drug dealer, let's be honest. I'm getting everyone hooked, and now you're going to have to listen to 20 hours of podcast a week like I do. So 20 might be too much. That might be too much. Corey.
And I am a member of the Brad Schreffler fan club because I started listening to Planning Period podcast a long time ago. And now I listen to a bunch of different ones. And so this was my first Ed Camp and I had seen people talking about it on Twitter forever. And so when I saw it was coming into Orange, I said, oh, I have to go. So I learned about flexible seating. I learned the behind the scenes to the podcasting, which I thought was really great. But I really loved connecting with people outside of my district. I thought that was really neat to see what other people are doing outside of Orange County, the bubble that I live in. So I thought that was really great.
I have to say, Corey, you were one of the most surreal experiences of my podcast experience ever. Corey came to my school for laptop distribution and ask me a question about something. I don't remember what it was. It was like unrelated. And she asked me a question about something about distribution. And
right.
I just replied. I was like, yeah, well, you know, I think blah, 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 blah. And she just looks at me and she goes, are you Brad Schreffler? And I was like, yeah, I'm Mr. Schreffler. I just assumed her kid goes to my school. I just assumed, like, she just knew me from around the school. And she goes, oh my God, I love your planning period. It was the most, like, she started, like, gushing about it was the most surreal experience of my life. I still can't quite believe that actually happened, that I was recognized by voice. I don't even know what to do with that now. It was insane, but it was very cool. So thank you.
Every Friday, I am listening, Brad. Every Friday.
I appreciate it. It's a fun show. I enjoy it. So I'm going to go to Mary.
Yes, I've been to Ed Camp before, and I really enjoy and appreciate meeting other people from other schools. And I also learn things that people are doing in kindergarten, which I can apply into my senior engineering class. And because we forget that people like hands-on and fun things to do. And so I've learned a lot of that over the years, so many different tools. And I was talking to Brad about podcasting and saying, what if you're not an auditory learner? How did you respond to that?
I said, that sucks.
And then you gave me a solution.
And then, yes, I said a lot of podcasts do have, you know, transcription and write blog posts to go with them and stuff like that. So there's usually some accompanying materials, and that usually helps as well. So cool. I really feel kind of bad that I've dominated Ed Camp Orange this year with all my podcasting stuff. That seems to be the only thing anyone talks about. I feel bad about that.
I think it's a great thing.
It is. I mean, you know, I think it's a really powerful medium. It's one of those things that, you know, podcasting has existed since around 2004 is when I first, you know, I can think of it coming around. And when it started to get that term of sort of internet radio call broadcasting. And it still is, you know, it's something that for people that listen to podcasts, it's a drastic part of their life. I mean, it's every second of every day it's on their mind. I mean, I get in my car anytime, whether it's 5 minutes or an hour, and immediately I turn on a podcast. I'm listening to something. I've got podcasts my 5-year-old son listens to. I've got some that if it's just me on my fiance and I in the car, then those are the podcasts we listen to. And then if it's just me on my drive to and from work every day, I mean, it's my every day is podcasting, it seems like. And for other people, it's like, what's a podcast? I don't even know what that is. And I'm like, wow, that's just crazy that it can be that important to some people and not even known by others. It's such a fascinating experience. Wow, that's cool. Well, you're like rock and rolling. What's your name? Sorry.
Oh, I'm Lucy.
Lucy. Did you have a good experience today?
Yes. Actually, here's my thinking is because I'm a Chinese teacher and all my Chinese coworkers, they always try to teach students talk about China.
But not speaking Chinese. That's a big difference. You should speak more in the language, right?
Mm-hmm.
So when I drive, I'm the same like you. I drive home and then every day I listen to broadcasts. So I was thinking, why don't we do something about the listening, the input? Because that's more important to push you have more output, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I was like, I want to do that, but I don't know how to do it. And then today when I came over, usually I was like, oh my goodness, it's just connect. And then today is just answer all my questions. So I'm like really surprised that I got those insights. So I really appreciate that.
Oh, thank you. You know, it's so interesting. We live in such, it's an odd profession we work in, right? Like there's this, I don't know any other profession that would show up on a Saturday to learn about how to do their job from other people that do their job. Like, it's not even like, I mean, sure, like businesses go to events and they learn and they do seminars and stuff, but
They all get paid.
For
every minute or hour they're there.
We're all here for free. Mm-hmm. What's wrong with us? Why do we do this?
I know. Because there's freebies.
Well, that's true. We did get some freebies. Mm-hmm. That's true.
Food.
I didn't actually get any freebies, but the other people did, so that's cool.
Connections. I told her about a girl I used to tutor, and she wants to improve her Chinese. She came from China as a 10-year-old. She's now in the 9th grade. And I found out she's a Chinese teacher. I said, can I have your phone number?
Exactly. You know, great connections. You know, I don't know, I love it. It's cool, and I want to see more of this. You know, I feel like in Florida we have a real lack. I really do. You know, that list they showed us at one point, and I think it had like 7 or 8 sessions on it and in the next 6 months. And, you know, I was talking to a lot of podcasters I know, especially in like the Jersey area and New York area, they have Ed Camps going on every single weekend of every week of the year. Like, it doesn't really Absolutely. And ladies, guys, feel free to come and go as you need to. Don't you? I'll sit here and talk to a mic for an hour. I don't have to. It's no problem. But thank you for joining us, Terry. And yeah, it's weird that we don't have more of it here. I feel like we really should have more of it.
I agree. So. I think in Orange County also we do so many things that are program related. It's all about the programs and not about best practices. And I think that's where the direction, we have to talk about best practices. And I think that's what EdCamp is all about as well. And it was beyond, I really thought it would be more technology, but really it was all about strategy. It was a little different than I thought, but I'm happily happily surprised that it was really great connections.
No, I think it's a phenomenal tool. It's really a great model that we need to see more of going on. You know, we're sitting here talking, and I'm just curious, for Corey, who's heard my podcast, and for the rest of you, my podcast focuses around three questions of all my guests, and I ask all my guests the same three questions, and it's very much a one-on-one show, very informal and relaxed, but I'm sitting here, and I'm kind of curious, now that I have you all here, about my first question I always ask all my guests. And my first question I always ask all my guests is, what is the biggest problem facing education today? And I'm gonna give you guys a moment to think, and then I'd be curious what your responses are about to that first question. What is the biggest problem we have facing education today? And Corey, I feel like you must have an answer because you've heard my podcast enough. So I'm going to go to you first while the other ladies get a chance to think
about
it.
Absolutely. And I've practiced this too because I had a feeling you were going to ask this. I think that, and I think about some of the guests that you've had that I really connected with. And I think there's been testing has been a big part. But I think that connecting the testing to the money, merit pay, I always said was going to be a huge mistake. And I think it is. I think it's a huge problem. I think our focus on testing, the time we take for testing, the whole school grade problem. I think that, and also the micromanagement. There's a huge micromanagement going on, and this teacher should be doing what the teacher next door should. They should be on exactly the same page. That is not Common Core. They think that that's what Common Core is, but that's really not what Common Core was supposed to be. So I think that that's one of the biggest problems. Okay. It's a couple things.
Okay. Mary,
mine is higher level. I just think what we're teaching now is we won't be teaching the same things now to the students that are entering kindergarten because the technology, they're just learning so many different things in so many different ways. And so I'm concerned about being prepared for the next generation.
I can definitely see that. You know, the stat that they always throw out is like, what, 90% of jobs that these kids will even be applying for don't exist right now. We don't even know, you know, I saw it in a video or something that it's like the problems that will exist for these kids to solve aren't even in the pre-stages of being problems yet. Like, we haven't even got the tools to solve the problems that are going to be problems. Like, you know, it's a mind-blowing thought that we can't even begin to predict what our future looks like going forward. Yeah, I think I agree.
I think it would be helpful to make what they're studying in school, make them realize how it's relevant to the real world, you know, like whatever topic it is. I teach civics, so I brought in newspapers about what happened on Martin Luther King Day on the following day. And they could see that, you know, reporting about, you know, Martin Luther King and what he did. And then I made it relevant to, you know, what they were studying.
I think relevance is critical. I agree completely.
Right. So from my experience, 5 years ago, I came from China. So for my big culture shock is I feel like the teacher here doesn't get as much as respect from the students. And also the pay is pretty low. And I just feel like the respect part is culture shock. It's a big disappointment to me. And then because 3 years ago I worked in a charter school and I feel like the parents' involvement is a big issue. Like, back in China, we don't have that issue because education is a key point that everybody understands it. Education is very important, no matter you're poor or not. Education is the key. So you don't have to educate the parents to know that it's important. So I feel like, why? This is so obvious. You don't know about that? Oh, my goodness. So I feel like those two things is quite a shock for me. So,
agreed. My last session of the day I was in was on advocacy. We talked about advocating for education and advocating for our students. And, you know, one of the points I brought up is, how much are we as teachers responsible for that image? Mm-hmm. You know, I think in the U.S. we have this vision of, you know, those who can do and those who can't teach. Mm-hmm. And it's in the social consciousness. It's in that social awareness that that's what this is. Mm-hmm. And I think it's really critical that we start to look beyond that. And more importantly, as teachers, we have to start to push that image back. We need to push back against that. And I brought up the example that when you have an intern come onto a school campus, what's the first thing that half the teachers say to them? It's like, why are you doing this? Right? The first thing we do is push people out of our field. Why? Right. We love what we do or else we wouldn't do it. Are we really that miserable day in and day out, but we're not miserable enough to fix it? And mm-hmm. so at some level, we need to stop that image ourselves. We're guilty of it. You know, and I brought up, like, I interact with news agencies constantly. You know, I'm replying back to local news stations and News 13 and WESH and all of our local Central Florida news agencies saying, like, okay, great. That teacher did something terrible. But for every one of those, look at what this guy's doing. Mm-hmm. Look at what this person's doing. Look at what's going on over here. Look at this group of 40 educators who came here on their day off for free, not getting paid, to come learn from each other. Like, where's this in the news? Where's this in the image of what we do every day?
Mm-hmm. At 5 o'clock, Channel 6 does have a what is Central Florida doing right about education? So that's kind of a nice thing.
I don't have cable, so.
It's not podcasted.
It's not a podcast. They need to make a podcast out of it, or I don't know it exists.
I think some of the problem with education also is, if ever there's a problem, it seems like, well, what can we do? What can the teacher do to fix it? Not anybody else. Like, no one else is involved. Let's put more on the teacher to fix this problem. That's how I feel. I've only been teaching 7 years, and I've worked in industry prior to this, and it just seems like there's less and less support and more expect. Actually, that's probably true. Expected across the board in the school and even in the district level. There's one person doing the job instead of five people that used to be.
Well, I think in Florida we have a unique situation that a significant percentage of our voters and our population are people who have moved here in retirement, and therefore their kids don't go here, their grandkids don't go here, they have no investment in education. So I think in Florida we have our funding base, which is our taxes, our taxpayers, don't care about Florida, at least a significant percentage of it don't care about education because it's not affecting them at some level. So I think we have a unique problem there that I don't know how you solve it. I don't know that there is a solution for that, unfortunately. You know, if you're a politician, pushing for educational funding means raising taxes on people who are on fixed incomes. And that's a unique problem that Florida faces that a lot of other parts of the country don't. You know, where people live there their whole lives and stay there, and their whole families and generations of families live there, they all of a sudden have a lot more investment in the education system, where we don't have that here in Florida, unfortunately. And I don't know the solution to that, obviously. We can't change the fact that this is a retirement destination or a tourist destination, but you know, there needs to be some leveraging somewhere to make that situation change.
Mm-hmm. I try really hard to put all the good things going on Twitter. I have an Instagram for my media center, and I try to put out all the good things because there are so many great things happening. Mm-hmm. And I think we need to flood it with all the positive things as much as possible and get that word out of the good things that we're doing.
And go the extra step of tagging those news agencies.
Definitely.
Like, hey, look what we're doing. Mm-hmm. Look what's happening. Give them. Because honestly, they are looking. They do. I think in a lot of times, they certainly love to portray a negative view of teachers. I get that. They will be glad to air a story that's loosely related to education. A local educator gets drunk driving. Local educator doesn't. You know, they love to throw that in there. But they also are happy to share the positives. And I don't think they're being reached out to. I think there's a general fear of teachers that we're not supposed to speak out. That we're not supposed to share our thoughts. You know, I think there's a general fear that that's something we're not supposed to do. Mm-hmm. So I think we all need to take it on ourselves to do that. Mm-hmm. You know, I want to ask, I'm going to go to my second question. Mm-hmm. I love my questions. They make me so happy. So I'm going to go to my second question, which is always for my guests, because I feel like we start with the problems, right? We have to start with the issues in education. Mm-hmm. But I don't ever want us to become this negative vacuum of problems. I want to talk about things we can do to work on them. So my second question for all my guests is, what is something you're doing right now that you wish all teachers would do, that you think applies universally and everyone should be doing in their classrooms? So again, I'm going to give you all a minute. I'm going to expect that Corey already has an answer.
Well, I think I already shared it about Twitter and Instagram. I created an Instagram account for students where And I found a way. They had to teach me how to get me to get more followers because I'm just the nerdy librarian. So they taught me how to do that. And so I try to put out as many positive things with them as possible. But also I talk to them about what I'm reading, because kids who have adults that read around them will also be readers. And so I think that that's really important. I think that kids always know what I'm reading, and I always ask them what they're reading. And now they're asking me, well, what are you reading? So I really wish that teachers would share the things that they read for fun and like to learn about.
Cool. Anyone want to go next? I know, well, it's a harder question, isn't it?
You're a librarian. I want to mention that I work at a school, which, you know, their library is kind of very basic. So I went to another school, which is in a well-off district, and I asked them if they have any surplus books. And they had a whole bunch of books, and they just gave them to me, and they said, we're so glad you're taking them. Otherwise, we would have just thrown them out, you know. So I wish there was some kind of central, you know, portal somewhere where, you know, schools that do have excess stuff, they can put it, you know, listed there. And the disadvantaged, you know, schools can just go and pick it up, you know.
You know, I agree. I think there's a lot of value. People want, despite the fact that our public doesn't care so much, people really do, and businesses really do want to help schools. And often, no one's asked them. They, you know, there's most corporate entities, enterprises, and corporate, especially like all Fortune, top Fortune companies, they have a budget for every one of their branches to donate and invest and spend, whether it's time, they get paid, you know, employees can get paid to volunteer at schools, employees or at charity events and nonprofits, and people just don't ask. And I think a lot of that comes with that image of teaching. Is we don't feel like we necessarily deserve to ask, right? And I think we're afraid to ask sometimes. But I agree, asking, just asking for things is, is a very powerful tool. You know, that's something, you know, we had sponsors donate things to EdCamp because they were willing to ask and say, hey, would you like to help? And I think that's a really critical component. I agree. That's great. And it tells a lot to the students, I feel like. When they see that people care, people are invested in their learning, I think it makes them more invested.
The grand prize gizmo, I was looking for something like that, and seeing someone actually show it to me, I said, wow, that's what I need. So
That'll be included in my EdCamp grant. It's going to be included in one of those for sure.
Because, you know, you can put anything and it would show it on the, you don't need fancy stuff. It's very basic, but very powerful. What is it called again?
Alina, what was that thing called? What was that? What was the actual brand of that the camera thing?
IPVO.
It's an IPVO.
IPVO.
Mary, Lucy?
So, go back to the topic. What I did that I wish everybody can get is, I don't know, it's just, recently I have an idea that I want to use more situational conversation to involve with my students. So, what I did is, every time when I encounter my students or they saw me in other situation, except in the classroom, they were trying to have a conversation with me, or because I feel like that is how you use the language, right? In all kinds of the situations. So I really wish, you know, I'm so happy my students is doing that, because when I came here, how do you say that? So right now I'm teaching 7th grade and 8th grade. So they start Chinese at 7th grade. So my 7th grade right now is very comfortable, speak Chinese with me every day. They open the door, blah, 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 just talk Chinese all the time. So my 8th graders, they're not getting used to me yet. But right now they're getting used to me more and trying to ask me questions in Chinese. So I'm really happy for that happening. So I know a lot of teachers, you know, very old traditional way. So, you know, this is Chinese, so hard. You cannot learn it. It's just so different from English. But however, if you use situational conversation, you learn from your year. Don't learn from the book. You're going to learn a lot of things. So this is what I'm trying to do. And then I feel like it's a big impact for my students. So.
Yeah, I think you should start your own podcast.
Yeah, absolutely.
Teaching Chinese.
Yeah, teaching Chinese. I'd learn Chinese that way.
I know.
Absolutely.
So a little bit on that note, one of the things that I've been doing for several years is So one of the tools to bring students in when they're talking and you want their attention is to count down. So let's bring it in on, you know, 3, 2, 1. And I try to do all kinds of different languages. And so that is one of the things that I wish other teachers would do is just go ahead and even say, like, what are questions? Or I had some students come up with all different languages that meant questions. So I think I'm saying this right. Preguntas is Spanish for questions. And then I can't tell you without looking at my cheat sheet. So I use a cheat sheet, and I'll bring it down in son, ni, ichi, like 3, 2, 1, and I give them a little visual to learn that. But awesome. But to what I really wish everyone was doing is talking about Internet of Things and not just talking. So in my classroom, it's technology, so it's engineering. And so we'll talk about the things that we can do. And some of the students have projects that deal with Internet of Things, with microcontrollers, basically. But it would be nice for all the students and the teachers to be thinking about how is this going to affect our lives in the future. The Internet of Things is here. Mm. And I was thinking about it at the end of last year, and it's here and it's in place, and
that's true.
And the security and just...
That's true.
Those kinds of things. A lot of things.
Yes. No, the security of Internet Things is terrifying. I mean, if you know anything about the Mirai botnet and all of that mess, because every one of these stupid devices is hard-coded with the password and terrible security because these companies don't care. But that has nothing to do with an education podcast. But you're right. It is a conversation we need to start having, because the fact that these companies don't understand that is the problem, right? The companies don't understand it. The consumer doesn't understand it. And we end up with this sort of generalized paranoia about technology. Like, I don't want an Alexa in my house because it's spying on me. Like, come on, let's take it back a step.
Or you have trouble with your computer and, is somebody hacking into me?
Yeah, exactly. Right. Am I getting hacked? What's happening? Oh, I'm so excited, guys. This is awesome. So the ladies who have planned and hosted and made this event possible have just sat down to join us. We have Beth and Alina. Alina?
Yep.
Alina. I'm one of those. I don't know how to speak. It's been a long day. But I'm so excited you guys have joined us. First of all, thank you both for putting on this awesome event. I think I echo everybody's opinions when I say thank you, because it has been a really awesome day. How are you guys feeling about it?
Awesome. Awesome. Excited for EdCamp Orange 2019.
I know.
Planning for next year. Yeah. I might know someone who wants to help plan it next year.
Awesome. We would welcome that.
What were your guys' big takeaways today?
So this is Alina. So this is our fourth year doing this. And I have to say that every year we gain a lot from the people that are in the room. But this year I felt like the conversations were taken to like the next level. Everybody in the room was talking. I didn't really see anybody sitting out not having conversations. And the diversity of topics was a little different than typically. I heard someone mention earlier about how they thought it'd be more of a tech focus. Oftentimes, a lot of the ed camps are tech focused, but I felt like there was such a diverse number of topics that were being offered that everybody had their needs met.
Mm-hmm. And honestly, like, I'm not saying that I don't learn anything by coming to an ed camp, but it's one thing running an ed camp and then just like going to an ed camp. So I love that we have it. I love the structure, and glad that we have it, but I'm like, I only get glimpses of learning, so I just can't wait to go. I love just learning about how I should be better as an organizer. That's what I kind of glean from running an ed camp, but I love to go to other ed camps to learn and get inspired to be better as an ed camp organizer and a teacher.
I was lucky enough to get to do sessions with both of you ladies, which I'm really happy about. And I got an awesome sketchnoting session with Beth, who taught me all about sketchnoting. And despite the fact I feel like I can't draw to save my life, she asked at the beginning of her session, she's like, as long as you can draw a square, a circle, and a triangle, you can do sketchnoting. How many of you can't draw those? And I was like, I really can't draw a circle. Like, circles are hard.
Yeah.
She was like, it doesn't have to be a perfect circle. Okay, fine. I struggle with squares. Like, it's hard. They're good on straight lines. I can't do this. What is this madness? This is insane. I thought it was great. I actually learned a lot about how to sketchnote and make something useful out of it. And I thought that was really cool. And I really liked the strategies you talked about. That was what I thought was cool, is getting to take the sketchnotes, but then also what to do after the fact, how you incorporate it in a classroom, how you do that. You girls can come on. You're free. That's fine. I thought that was really cool. So I appreciate that a lot, because I will see myself using that more.
Well, it's funny that you mentioned that, because I learned about sketchnoting at an ed camp in June, which made me write an ed camp impact grant to get supplies to do it here. But it was really going to another ed camp in October to like reinforce what I learned for me to actually get the courage. Okay, let's go do this with teachers and students. And so ed camp learning the model, keep like there's follow up to it, I guess is what I'm saying.
Yeah,
like cool. Practice so I can practice what I learned in a safe place. So thanks for like being a victim where I passed my learning along.
I liked it. I will be using it more. And you gave me a notebook and something, a pen now, and I'm set to go, ready to do my own sketch noting. And then Alina and I, we talked about advocacy in your last session, and I thought that was really fascinating. Like, it was interesting, the looking at the different perspectives of how we should be advocating as teachers.
Absolutely. I don't think we do enough of it. We're our own worst enemies because we want to spend all our time focusing on working with kids that we forget to advocate for their needs as well as our own. And, you know, it's hard because we're in our own little silos, but we have to find a way to connect. And we talked about different organizations we can connect with to help get our voice out. But one of the things I learned was from you, Brad, which I thought was a great, easy way to get the positives out there. What Brad does is he makes a search list of key terms that come up on Twitter from news organizations and reporters. And whenever they're out there saying something negative about education, he comes back with something positive. And so that is something that I could easily do to kind of get my voice out there more often for our students, because it's hard to advocate, and we really need to do more.
Yeah. I got to remember, I will put the if this then that setup. What do they call it? Recipes now, I think. Mm-hmm. They changed the terminology on if this and that, but I need to put a link to that in the Ed Camp notes.
Awesome.
Thingy, because I need to, you know, actually do that. Mm-hmm. But yeah, no, it's easy. I think you're right. When it comes to advocacy, we need to be getting our voice out. You know, we talked about this a little bit already, but we need to be getting our voice out there, and we need to be talking about the positives in education and not immediately telling every student that wants to be a teacher, like, oh, are you sure about that? Like, maybe not do that. You know, we got to stop talking about our profession like it isn't something wonderful, you know, because it is. It is truly, it seems so cheesy. Like, I feel dirty saying it, but at the same time, it is genuinely like life-changing. There's something profound and amazing about knowing that you've helped a kid become something. You've helped a kid become a successful adult, you know. And Beth, you today had the experience of a couple of your former students were here as teachers, right? Or at least one of them. Like,
well, not my high school student.
Not your high school student.
My high school student did not come today, who's a teacher alongside me. It was one of my college students.
Like, that's just so cool. Like, you had, like, that's an impact you had, right? Like, that's something. Like,
yes.
That's just awesome. You also dragged your child into the event as well. And we had two students today that were helping out. So, hi, ladies. How are you? Looks like Josie.
Yeah.
And what's your name? Hope. All right. Josie and Hope, did you guys have a good time today? I know you were mostly were working, right? You
had to work. Yeah.
One of you wants to start your own podcast, right? Hope?
Yeah.
What do you want to start your own podcast? What is it? What is it called?
Didn't you decide on the poll? No. Change.
Still brainstorming?
Yeah.
What do you want it to be about?
I don't know.
Okay, cool. I'm good with that. Just put a mic in front of you and start recording. That's what I say. And then your first like seven times will be garbage. Don't show them to anybody. They'll be awful. By the way, anybody that took my podcast and said, I didn't really include that, but your first seven are going to be garbage. And unless you're like me and have a really thick skin and are convinced you're the greatest thing since sliced bread, you probably shouldn't publish your first seven. Just keep them to yourself. I just returned on a mic and started publishing things because I'm a lunatic. But I don't necessarily think that's always the best idea. Not everybody likes to build the plane in the air like I do, but no, I encourage that. Go for it. Go out there, put a mic in front of your face. They're not hard to get a hold of. I bet you could probably get away with writing an impact grant. I hear you know someone on the committee.
And you can use the IPVO.cam to support it.
She also has a birthday coming up, so maybe she'd ask for a Yeti.
Yeah, there you go. It's my baby. My blue Yeti is a gorgeous mic. So pretty.
Awesome.
I love you. Wow. You know, guys, I had a really wonderful time today, and I just really genuinely want to say thank you because I know it is not an easy feat to put one of these events on, and I know the work that has gone into it. For anybody thinking about starting their own ed camp, could you tell us maybe a little bit about some of the work that does go into it, some of the maybe the key phases or how you guys plan for this one?
Sure. I mean, we went to an ed camp in September, and we pulled off our first ed camp within 4 months. So, and there were three of us. So, you know, our missing link is not here, and she's really good at something that I'm not good at. And I think it's something that we have to be better about, which is like putting it, tweeting, social media. But Alina is really awesome about contacting people and getting prizes. And I'm like the, I think I'm the facilities person.
Yes, absolutely.
So I think, you know, just by happenstance, there were actually, and also Tanya was with us too. So she got us money that first time.
Yes.
So just really like getting like-minded people who are not going to look at the obstacles, like they're going to make this happen. And also like finding the space, I think, is key first and foremost. So here, my principal is totally behind it. We have the keys. It happens. So finding I think it's all about making sure you have a place, you know, space and a structure. So we were able to steal from the Ed Camp we had been to also.
Mm-hmm. And it's helpful, the contact with the Ed Camp Foundation. If you've never put on an Ed Camp, they have resources and tutorials on their website. So they kind of walk you through what an Ed Camp is, what are some things you need. And gratefully, because Ed Camp is so popular nationwide, there's been funding to back it. So they have a foundation set up where you can, if you register your Ed Camp with them, they will send you a package. And in that package, you will have prizes, swag. You will have a little bit of funding, and it varies based on, you know, their year.
It's their Ed Camp in a box.
Ed Camp in a box. And that's really all you need. I think at the beginning, the first year, we were kind of, or at least I was kind of stressed out about, are we going to have enough money to pay for lunch, for breakfast? You don't have to do that. You can everybody bring their own breakfast if you want to. You don't have to get prizes. The greatest thing about advertising is you tweet out there, save the date, Ed Camp coming up, and then somebody contacts you and says, hey, I want to sponsor you. Here's some free swag, or here's a free prize. So that part was easier than anticipated. But if you have a good plan and you have some connections to kind of help you talk through things, then it's not that hard to put together.
And I think the cool thing is that, like, we're not necessarily all at the same workspace, but we don't have to meet face-to-face. I mean, even then, we would have virtual meetings, so there's not a lot of...
We've used Voxer quite a bit to send messages back and forth.
So there's not a lot of, like...
Face-to-face time.
Yeah. I mean, because we're all really busy in our position. So, D-Day is, you know, from Friday till now are the critical, where you need feet on the ground.
And then we use Google Drive for storing all of our documents so we can all share them out. And we've just kind of evolved the spreadsheets as the years have gone on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so. The first year is probably the hardest.
Yeah, the first year was definitely tough. But now it's like, when's that camp next week? We're good to go.
I'm like, I feel good. You feel good?
Yep, we're good.
Okay.
Let's ask the big question. What is your biggest thing for improvement next year? What do you want to do better next year? Right?
For me, and I think Beth probably feels the same way, is we want more presence here. One of the hardest things about an Ed Camp is it's free. And you can get 100 people register and half of them show up. And so that's a challenge. And so how can we take our 100 and turn it to 200 to 300? How can we infiltrate the systems that are already out there to get more people here? The conversations are great. When you have two people, you have a conversation. So if we had two people, we've been successful. But we want to spread it out there because this is a great way to learn. You have an opportunity to have a voice. It's not a sit and get. And you take from it what you want. And so the more people that can see that and experience it, I think will be more ignited in their classrooms.
I agree. For me, you know, we have 1,000 unique visits to our Eventbrite page. So, like, to be better on, like, people in my community understanding what it is. So, like, even in my own school, I'm not as, I don't want to say transparent, or I'm so consumed with, like, the daily, like, people know about sketchnoting at my school because I've done a few sessions, but they don't know, like, my whole story. Like, I got this from Ed Camp. So there's, like, this whole other part of my professional life that is kind of underground at work. So I think you can relate to that, Brad.
I might be able to relate to that a little bit.
So I just think, like, you know, finding, you know, infiltrating and really, like, spreading the message. Like, I didn't do a really good job of, I have contacts, but just, what is Ed Camp? You know, I think people don't know what Ed Camp is, and it's free, so it's easy to, like, not come. And I know, Corey, this is your first one, so I'm always, and I love that all three of you are first time. Mm-hmm. You know, what made you come as, that's what I want to know. As a first timer, what brought you here? Like, how did you get here?
Beth just taking over my show. I like it. No, I'm genuinely like it. Let's go. Do it. Take over.
For me, it was Twitter. And I think it was connecting, it was developing this professional learning network and people talking about all different kinds of ed camps around. And so when I saw that come out, mentioned by somebody else, I think, and also Sam, who was here today, we did something at the beginning of the year at our school for it at the very, very beginning. And so we did a day of our professional development doing an ed camp. And so that was like, wow, that's really cool. I want to go see one in person. So I think that's how I was able to get connected.
And did it live up to your expectations?
Absolutely. Beyond. Exceeded. Exceeded.
Awesome. So for me, I got an email from one of our coworkers in the media center. And I got an email. I never been to ed camp ever before. But I'm the person who like to, you know, self-motivated. I want to learn things different. And then on Friday during the lunchtime, like coworker, we have lunchtime together. And I would just randomly ask, is anybody go to tomorrow's, you know, ed camp? And everybody's answering, Saturday is very special for me. So, you know, they don't have time to do that. I was like, am I the only one? So I'm kind of scared. But this morning I was like, should I go or should I not go? So I'm really the one of the person may come or may not come. But today when I come over, I probably would go back to the launch and tell all my coworkers it was it, you should definitely come. But I feel like they probably think more about technology part instead of, you know, have more conversation, talk about what we can do better in our classroom. So I think that's a big difference is they think, you know, is have a little bit misunderstanding about it. But I think it's cool. I would definitely come over next time. So.
Awesome.
And I was just doing an online search, and I don't remember how I ended up there. But then it looked interesting. I liked the logo on it, colorful logo, and I said, okay, I should check it out. So it's quite a drive from Bradenton, you know, almost two hours, but it was definitely worth it.
Wow.
See, that always surprises me that we get a lot of traffic from other places, and we have so many teachers in this community. So you're going to be our Lake Highland hookup.
I am.
Okay?
I'm going to. I'm going to tell them. Yeah. Awesome. Come over here next year. Yeah.
Awesome. Very cool.
Okay, you can have your show back.
I can. Thank you. Thank you for the permission.
I was like, there was a participant, you know, live participant.
No, I don't care. Go ahead. Whatever. My show is not a real thing anyway. It's basically my parents and Corey that listen to it.
No,
pretty much it.
I do.
Yes, and Beth. My parents
and
Corey.
I'm going to start.
There we go.
Me too. I already subscribe it.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. I want to say, because when we were talking ahead of time, before you guys sat down with me, I feel bad because I feel like I took over ed camp with podcasting today. I didn't mean to. That wasn't really the intention, but I appreciate that venue to be able to speak and first letting us do an hour in live and do a recording here. So that's, you know, I really appreciate that venue for it as well. I think it's such a great way to connect with people and get out there, you know.
Oh, I think you could have like done a whole like 4 hours on podcasting.
Well, so, I didn't mean that.
I didn't get to go. Like,
I didn't mean that I couldn't talk about podcasting for hours on end, because certainly I can. It's all I ever do is talk about podcasting. It seems like my fiance regularly has to tell me to shut up when other people are around. She's like, they don't care, Brad. They don't care, Brad. Like, they don't care. Like, but I care, so they should care. Like, I care a lot. They should care. That doesn't ever work.
But I think that's also the cool thing about going to ed camp, because now that I've done it for 4 years, like the word sketchnoting was not in the community 3 years ago. So it's become really big this year. So for me as a teacher and also like a learner, it's let me really be the lead learner on my campus, because I feel like I'm able, when I go to an ed camp, to bring like a really good piece to my school, what's missing. So, you know.
I think it's great. I think that's what I love the most about the EdCamp model, is it's that everyone is a learner. You know, you go to the major conferences, and certainly everyone knows I love ISTE. That's my baby. But at the same time, there is something cool about that EdCamp informality of just showing up and just like not really knowing what you're going to talk about. I mean, like I said a couple times today, like I didn't plan on talking about podcasting in two different sessions, and I wasn't prepared to talk about podcasting in two different sessions, and just kind of ran with the flow and like whatever. But it's just great because you really don't know what your day is going to be like, but it puts the learning forward. Like, I'm the quote unquote expert on podcasting, which I am not at all, but let's just say today I am, but I still get to learn about other things. I get to learn about sketchnoting and talk about advocacy and talk about things that are going on in education. And, you know, it's just such a cool experience, and it's all a bunch of people. Nobody, like, nobody has these egos in here. You know, nobody's like, I'm the expert, I'm the sage on the stage. None of those things are happening. And it's just not necessarily the vibe at a normal conference. And that's, I think, what makes EdCamp so unique.
Absolutely. I wanted to throw one more thing in there about EdCamps when you're asking questions about starting them and stuff. Having a session on Twitter has been helpful. And for a lot of people I've noticed, it seems like every EdCamp we go to, somebody does a session on it. And that's how you increase your following and getting the word out there, because that's where the social media is. And in the session I had, there were several people that they all had Twitter accounts, but they never used them. And so now they're excited about finding a new way to use it and expand that network. And so that, I think, is a plus that you have to have for every EdCamp.
Yeah, you know, we talked about that a little bit before we sat down, and it amazes me. I'm so invested in Twitter and living on Twitter all the time that it just amazes me that there are educators out there who don't know the mecca that is Twitter. I mean, it is, like, to me, it's the Holy Land. It's every second of every day is just, like, education goodness. And it's amazing to me that people don't know about that still. It's just, like, it's just crazy.
Or their perception is it's used from some other medium and not that education track.
Like, I'm not a celebrity. No one cares what I have to say. Like, oh, my God, stop. Like, no, I don't follow celebrities. Like, that's not what my Twitter is for.
Yeah. Yeah, the PLN that I've cultivated on there has been pretty powerful.
Yeah. Well, we're running up to an hour here. We're getting close to the end point. I want everybody to get a chance to, if you have something you want to promote, but I want to at least say thank you to everybody. Mary, can we find you on Twitter?
You can. Aiken Earring.
Okay.
A-C-K-E-N. Anyway, I'm an engineering teacher, so Aiken Earring.
Aiken Earring. Oh, like Aiken Earring. I like it.
It's my last name.
There
and
we
earring,
go.
Like engineering.
Aiken-ear. I like
and
it.
And actually, I started my first Twitter account here at EdCamp, I think, 3 or 4 years ago.
Our first one?
And then I said, you know, I teach technology. I should be using it. So still, I just really use it to take pictures of what my students are doing and tweeting it out to the district and to maybe local. And now I've learned today just how you can use hashtag and really look for things that you're interested in. I mean, I know about following people and I follow people, but I honestly don't really read too much of what's going on except for with my school and my district.
Mary, did you share at all? Like, Mary was actually our first participant who ever actually brought her students to an ed camp. And so that's one thing that when you talk about what do we want to have in our ed camp, you know, I want to think about EdCamp for parents and students, because the most powerful thing I ever saw at my first EdCamp was, because it was from a smaller school system, the students in there sitting side by side with their teachers talking about bullying in the school. Mm. And the kids were just saying, you know, having those elbow-to-elbow conversations with their teachers in a safe space, and the teachers learn so much from the students. So that's also another thing. But you have brought your students here.
Yes, and they really, it was a great opportunity for them to talk about their projects and the engineering design process, and it made them feel really good. It pumped them up and gave them experience to share what they'd been doing and get good questions from stakeholders, people that might be interested in their product, and then therefore they could, that's part of the design process, and they can improve what they had. But it also, I was going to say, the one thing I like about EdCamp is how casual it is in a sense. It's structured enough where you're going to learn and have plenty of takeaways. But I like that it's casual enough that you can pick up something that in a very structured conference setting you wouldn't pick up. You know, it's like your students. When they talk to you in between breaks, you might learn something about what's going on in their life. Whereas in the classroom, you might not have that time.
Yeah, I agree. Corey?
So on Twitter, it's Miss Grady, MissGrady1, Miss Grady 1. And then my Media Center Instagram is OCPS_WalkerReads.
Okay. Can we find you on Twitter?
I'll have to make an account.
All right, you're going to have to now. You got to.
No pressure.
You got to. Lucy?
I have a Twitter account, but I don't think I use it a lot. So... However, I think last year I shared the room with a French teacher and we take a picture about what's going on in our classroom. So my Twitter account is just Lucy is a teacher. However, Lucy spells as L-U-S-I, not L-U-C-Y. Okay.
Lucy is a teacher. Excellent. Yep.
Oh, sorry. I was
yeah, you're
just
next.
Trying to put
you're,
that
trying to, you're trying to add them all in. That's fine. I'm going to have to go just back and make sure I get them all and tag them.
So mine's... Alina Davis, A-L-I-N-A-D-A-V-I-S. So one of those lucky ones that I got to have my name.
Nice. Scanlow.
I'm Scanlow, and that's not me trying to be cool. That's just how my original email from OCPS was. So it's at S-C-A-N-L-O-E. But you can also follow EdCamp Orange.
And the EdCamp Orange account, absolutely, which if you follow me on Twitter, you've seen me tweet out a handful of times recently.
Yep. Yes, and we thank you for that.
Hey,
yes.
Absolutely. I'm, you know, I believe in this. I believe in this mission. I believe in what you guys stand for as well. So I certainly will be more involved next year. So we can discuss that more later.
And it's recorded.
And it's recorded.
It's promised.
Yeah, except
listeners.
I still hold the recording. I can cut it out before I air it. So don't get too excited. I can still make changes.
I have witnesses.
Yeah, that's their word against mine. And of course, you know me. I'm at Brad Schreffler. And you can catch me on Twitter and I don't know, pretty much just Twitter. That's pretty much where I live, bradtrepo.com and the Planning Period Podcast. And of course, you are listening to Voice Ed Radio. Your voice is right here. Have a great night, everybody.